Refrain from dabbling in magic. 7. Refrain from taking intoxicating drinks and drugs. Shall we have a look at these rules in somewhat greater detail? We said do as you would be done by. Well, that is good enough, because if you are in possession of your normal faculties, you would not stab yourself in the back, nor would you swindle yourself or overcharge yourself. If you are a normal person, you like to look after yourself as much as possible. You will be living according to the golden rule if you look after your neighbor as you would yourself. In other words, do as you would be done by. It helps, it works out. This turning the other cheek business works out with normal people. If some person cannot accept your purity of thought and motive, then after you have suffered in silence two, or, at most, three times, you would be well advised to keep free of that person's presence. In the world beyond this life, we cannot meet those who are opposed to us, those with whom we are not in harmony. Unfortunately, we have to meet some pretty horrible people while on earth, but we need not do so from choice but only from sheer necessity. So, do as you would be done by, and your character will stand you in good stead, and will be as a shining light to all men and to 176, all women. You will be known as a person who does good, as a person who keeps a promise, so that if you are swindled, the swindler will never get any sympathy. In connection with this, it is good to remember that not even the biggest swindlers can take a single cent away from this life. We also say, do not judge others. You may yet be in a similar position to the person whom you have judged or condemned. You know the circumstances relating to your own affairs, but no one else does. Not even the person who is nearest and dearest to you can share the thoughts of your soul. No one, upon this earth at least, can be completely in harmony with another person. Possibly you are married, possibly you are very happy with your partner, but even so, even in the happiest marriages, sometimes a partner will do something which is completely mystifying to the other. Often it is not even possible to explain one's motives. Let the innocent among you be the first to cast a stone. People in glass houses should not throw stones. These are very good teachings, because no one is completely innocent. If anyone was completely pure, completely innocent, they could not stay on this bad old earth of ours. So by saying that the innocent only should throw stones, then there is no one to throw stones. We are, quite bluntly, all in very much of a mess down here on earth. People come here to learn things. If they had nothing to learn, they would not come here, they would go to a better place altogether. We all make mistakes, many of us get blamed for things which we have not done, many of us do not get credit for the good which we have done. Does it matter? Later, when we leave this earth, when we leave our training school, we shall find that the standards are very different indeed. The standards will not be in pounds sterling, nor in dollars, nor pesos or rupees, the standards. We shall then be assessed at our true worth. So, do not judge others. Our third rule, be punctual in all you do, may be rather a surprise to you, but it is a logical rule. People arrange to do things, people have their plans, and there is a time and a place for everything. In being unpunctual, we may upset the plans and ideas of the other person. In being unpunctual, we may build up some resentment in the person who, 177, has been kept waiting so long, and if we build up resentment and frustration, that person may take a different course to that which originally was the one planned. That means that by being unpunctual, we have caused another person to take a course of action not originally planned, and that is our responsibility. Punctuality can be a habit quite as much as can unpunctuality. But punctuality is tidy, it is the disciplining of the body, of the spirit and of the soul too. Punctuality shows respect for oneself, because it means that one is able to keep one's word, and it shows respect for others, because in that case we are punctual because we respect others. Punctuality, then, is a virtue which is well worth cultivating. It is a virtue which increases our own mental and spiritual status. Now about religion, it is wrong indeed to scoff at another person's religion. You believe this, another person believes that. Does it matter what you call God? God is God, whatever he is called. Can you argue about the two sides of a coin? Unfortunately, throughout the history of mankind, there has been too much bad thought about religion which should cause only good thought. We repeat to a certain extent this rule about religion in rule number 5, because we say that one should keep to one's own religion. It is rarely wise to change. While upon earth we are in midstream, the midstream of life, and it is not wise to change horses in midstream. Most of us came to this earth with a certain plan in mind. For most of us that entailed believing in a certain religion or a certain form or branch of religion, and unless there are the strongest of strong reasons, it is unwise to change one's religion. One assimilates religion as one assimilates the language when young. Just as it is always harder to learn a language when one is older, so is it harder to be able to absorb the nuances of a different religion. It is also wrong to try to influence another person to change to a different religion. What may be suitable for you may not be suitable for the other person. Remember rule 2, and do not judge others. You cannot judge what religion will suit another person unless you can get inside his skin, get inside his mind, and get inside his soul as well. Lacking the ability to do that, it may be considered an unwise thing indeed to interfere with, to weaken, or to scoff at the religious beliefs of 178 another. Just as we should do as we would be done by, we should give full tolerance, full freedom to another person to believe and worship as he or she thinks fit. We should resent interference ourselves, so let us realize that the other person may resent it also. Rule number 6 is, refrain from dabbling in magic. That is because many forms of magic are harmful. There are many, many things in occultism which can harm one immensely if one studies without guidance. An astronomer would never gaze at the sun through a high-powered telescope without taking suitable precautions, without, in fact, having some suitable sun filters in front of the lens. Even the poorest astronomer would know that gazing upon the sun through a high-powered telescope would result in blindness. In much the same way, dabbling in the occult without suitable training, without suitable guidance, can lead to nervous breakdown, can lead to a whole host of thoroughly unpleasant symptoms. We are definitely opposed to the practice of taking Eastern yogic exercises and trying to torture a poor Western body into some of those postures. These exercises are designed for the Eastern body, which has been schooled in these postures from the very earliest days, and it can harm one immensely to get oneself in a contorted mess of bruised muscles just because the exercise has a yogic title. Let us study occultism, by all means, but let us study it sensibly and with guidance. We do not advise one to commune with the dead or do other remarkable practices of that type. It can be done, of course, and is done every day, but it is a matter which can be thoroughly painful and harmful to both sides unless it is done under the competent supervision of a trained person. Some people study the daily newspaper to see what their horoscope is for that day. Many people, unfortunately, take these forecasts absolutely seriously and model their life upon them. A horoscope is a useless and dangerous thing unless prepared according to exact natal data by a competent astrologer, and the cost of such astrologers' services would be high indeed because of the considerable knowledge required in the long, long time which the computations would take. It is not enough to take the sun sign or the moon sign, or the color of 179, one's hair, or whether one's toes turn up or not. One can do it exactly only if one has the training and the data. So, unless you know of an astrologer who has that training, and patience and the time available, and unless you have an ample supply of money with which to pay for all this time and knowledge, we suggest you do not dabble in astrology. It can cause you harm. Instead, study only that which is pure and innocent, such as, we venture to say with due modesty, this course which is, after all, but an exposition of natural laws, laws which relate even to breathing and to walking. Our last rule was refrain from taking intoxicating drinks, or drugs. Well, we should have said enough throughout this course to let you realize the dangers of driving the astral body willy-nilly from the physical body, and, as it were, stunning it. Intoxicating drinks harm the soul, they distort the impressions transmitted through the silver cord. They impair the mechanism of the brain which, we must remember, is but a receiving and transmitting station concerned with the manipulation of the body up on Earth and the receipt of knowledge in the world beyond. Drugs are even worse, for drugs are even more habit-forming. If one is going to take to drugs, then one is in effect abandoning all that one aspires to in this life, and in giving way to the false blandishments of intoxicating drinks and drugs one may be paving the way for life after life upon earth, until one has thoroughly worked out the karma which that silly, silly habit has built up for us. All life should be ordered, all life should have discipline. A religious belief, if one adheres to one's belief, is a useful form of spiritual discipline. One sees nowadays teenage gangs in all the cities of the world. Through World War II home ties were weakened, perhaps the father went to the war and the mother worked in a factory, with the result that young, impressionable children played on the streets without any adult supervision, and these young, impressionable children banded together into gangs. They made their own form of discipline, the discipline of gangsterdom. We believe that until the discipline of the love of parents, and the discipline of religion can take over, then teenage crime will continue and increase. If we all have mental discipline, we may be able to set some sort of example to those 180 who have not. For, remember, discipline is essential. It is discipline that distinguishes a highly trained army from a disorganized rabble. Lesson 27. We are going to bring our old friend, the subconscious, to the forefront because the relationship between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind offers an explanation as to why hypnotism works. We are really two people in one. One of these people is a little person a ninth the size of the other, an active little person who likes to interfere, likes to be bossy, likes to control. The other person, the subconscious, is likened to an amiable giant without reasoning power. For the conscious mind has reason and logic but no memory, the subconscious mind cannot use reason and has no logic but it is the seat of memory. Everything that has ever happened to a person, even things that happened before birth, are retained within the subconscious, and under suitable types of hypnosis that memory can be released for consideration by others. One might say, for the purpose of this illustration, that the body as a whole represents a very large library. In the front office, or in the front desk, we have a librarian. Her chief virtue is that while she may not know much about different subjects, she will know instantly the books which contain the desired information. She is adept at consulting filing cards and then producing the book with desired knowledge. People are like that. The conscious mind has this ability to reason, often incorrect reasoning, too, and it is able to exercise a form of logic, but it has no memory. Its virtue is that when trained it can stir up the subconscious so that the latter provides information stored in the memory cells. Between the subconscious mind and the conscious mind there is what we might call a screen which effectively blocks off all information from the conscious mind. It means that the conscious mind cannot just probe around in the subconscious at any time. This, of course, is absolutely necessary because one would eventually contaminate the other. We stated that the subconscious had memory but no reason. It will be clear that if the memory could be combined with reason, then some facets of information would be distorted. 181, because the subconscious, with the power of reasoning, might say in effect, "Oh, that is ridiculous. That cannot possibly be. I must have misread the facts, let me alter my memory banks." So it is that the subconscious is without reason, and the conscious is without memory. We have two rules to remember, L. The subconscious mind is without reason, therefore it can only act upon suggestion as given to it. It can only retain in the memory any statement true or untrue which is given to it. It is not able to evaluate whether that information is true or false. 2. The conscious mind can only concentrate upon one idea at a time. You will readily appreciate that all the time we are receiving impressions, forming opinions, seeing things, hearing things, touching things, and if the subconscious mind were unprotected, then everything would pour in and we would have our memories cluttered with quite useless information, frequently incorrect information. Between the subconscious and the conscious minds there is a screen which can block off those matters which have to be considered by the conscious before they can be passed on to the subconscious for filing. The conscious mind, then, limited to considering one thought at a time, selects the thought which appears to be the most important, examines the thought, accepts or rejects it in the light of reason or logic. You may complain that this cannot possibly be so because you personally can think of two or three things at once. But that is not the case. Thought is very quick indeed, and it is an established fact that thought changes even faster than a lightning flash. So, although you may consciously think that you have two or three thoughts at once, careful investigation by scientists prove that only one thought can occupy the attention at one time. We should make it clear that, as we have already stated, the memory banks of the subconscious mind hold a knowledge of everything that has ever happened to that particular body. This conscious threshold or screen does not prevent the entry of information. Everything pours into the subconscious memory, but information which has to be scrutinized by the logical reasoning brain is held back until such time as it has been evaluated. Let us see, then, how hypnotism works. 182. The subconscious mind has no power of discrimination, no power of reasoning, no power of logic. So if we can force a suggestion through the screen which normally exists between the conscious and the subconscious, we can cause the subconscious to behave as we want it to. If we concentrate conscious attention upon a single thought, then we increase the suggestibility. If we put the thought to a person that they will be hypnotized, and they believe that they will be hypnotized, then they will be, because that screen is then lowered. Many people boast that they cannot be hypnotized, but they boast about it rather too volubly. In denying their susceptibility to hypnosis, they are merely intensifying their susceptibility, because, again, in any battle between the imagination and the imagination always wins. People may will themselves not to be hypnotized. It is then as though the imagination rises up in wrath and says, "You jolly well will be hypnotized." And the subject goes under almost before he knows that anything has happened. Of course you know how one becomes hypnotized. It will not harm us, though, to go into it again. The first thing to do is to have some method of attracting a person's attention so that the conscious mind, which can hold one thought only at a time, is held captive, and then suggestions can creep into the subconscious. Usually the hypnotist has a bright button or a piece of glass, or some other gimmick, and he asks his subjects to consciously focus the attention upon that glittering object, and to focus the attention unwaveringly upon that object. The whole purpose of this, we repeat, is to so engage the conscious mind that it cannot perceive that certain workings are taking place behind its back. The hypnotist will hold an object just above eye level because in looking up to that level a person's eyes are put in an unnatural position of strain. It strains the muscles of the eyes and the eyelids as well, and the eyelid muscles are quite definitely the weakest muscles in the human body, and tire more quickly than does any other muscle. A few seconds, and the eyes tire, they begin to water. It is a simple matter then for the hypnotist to state that the eyes are tired and that the person wants to sleep. Of course he wants to close his eyes because the hypnotist has just thoroughly tired those muscles. Dirty. 183. Monotony in repeating that the eyes are tired bores the subject, and knocks down the guard, the awareness, of the subject. Frankly, he is thoroughly bored with the whole affair, and feels that he would gladly sleep to have something different to do. When this has been done a few times, the suggestibility of the subject has been increased, that is, he is forming the habit of becoming hypnotically influenced. So, when a person, the hypnotist, says that the subject's eyes are becoming tired, the subject accepts that without the slightest hesitation because previous experiences have proved that the eyes did become tired under those conditions. Thus, the subject places more and more faith in the statements of the hypnotist. The subconscious mind is quite uncritical, it is not able to discriminate, so if the conscious mind can accept the proposition that eyes become tired when the hypnotist says so, then the subconscious will also agree that there shall be no pain when the hypnotist says so. In that case, a hypnotist who knows his job, can see that a woman has completely painless childbirth, or can see a patient has a dental extraction without any pain or any discomfort even. It is a simple matter indeed, and it needs merely slight practice. The whole thing is, then, that a person who is going to be hypnotized has accepted the statements of the hypnotist. In other words, the subject was told that his eyes were becoming tired. His own experience proved to him that his eyes were becoming tired. He was told by the hypnotist that he would feel much ease if he closed his eyes, and when he did close his eyes, he did feel ease. A hypnotist always has to make sure that his statements are thoroughly believed by the person being hypnotized. It is useless to tell a person that he is standing up when obviously he is lying down. Most hypnotists only tell the subject of a certain thing after the thing has been proved. For instance, the hypnotist may tell the subject to stretch out his arm at full length. He will repeat it in a monotonous voice for some time, and then when he sees that the subject's arm is becoming tired, he will say, "Your arm is becoming tired, your arm is feeling heavy, your arm is becoming tired." The subject can readily agree to that remark because it is self-evident that he is becoming tired, but in the light trance state he is not in a 184 position to say to the hypnotist, "Well, you idiot. Of course it is tired as I am keeping it out like this." Instead, he just believes that the hypnotist has some certain power, some certain ability which can make him do whatever is ordered. In the future it will be that doctors and surgeons will resort more and more to hypnotic methods, because there is no after effect with hypnotism, nothing painful, nothing at all disturbing. Hypnotism is natural and almost every person is susceptible to hypnotic commands. The more a person asserts that he or she cannot be hypnotized, the more easy it is to hypnotize that person. We are not concerned with hypnotizing other people, however, because unless in highly trained hands, that can be a highly dangerous and evil thing. We are concerned in helping you to hypnotize yourself, because if you hypnotize yourself, you can get away from bad habits, you can cure yourself of weaknesses, you can raise your temperature in cold weather, and do a lot of useful things like that. We are not going to teach you how to hypnotize others because we consider it to be dangerous unless one has years of experience. There are certain factors about hypnotism which we are going to mention, though, and in the next lesson we will deal with self or auto-hypnotism. It is said in the West that no person can be hypnotized instantly. That is incorrect. Any person can be hypnotized instantly by one who has been trained in certain Eastern methods. Fortunately, few Westerners have been so trained. It is also stated that no person can be hypnotized and compelled to do a thing in opposition to their own moral code. Here again, this is false. It is absolutely false. One could not go up to a righteous, good living man, hypnotize him, and say, "Now you go out and rob a bank." The subject would not do it. He would just wake up instead. But a skillful hypnotist can so phrase his commands and his words that the hypnotized subject believes that he is taking part in a play or in a game. It is possible, for instance, for a hypnotist to do very wrong things to another person. All he has to do is, by suitably chosen words and suggestions, to persuade the subject that he or she is with perhaps a loved one, a trusted one, or again, is playing. We do not propose to deal 185, any more with this particular aspect of it because hypnotism is truly a shockingly dangerous thing in unscrupulous hands, and in untrained hands. We suggest that you have nothing whatever to do with hypnotism unless it be treatment under the care of a reputable, highly experienced, highly trained medical practitioner. In dealing with auto or self-hypnotism, if you follow our instructions, you cannot harm yourself and you cannot harm anyone else. On the contrary, you can do a lot of good for yourself and perhaps for other people too. Lesson 28. In the last lesson, and, indeed, throughout this course, we have seen how we are really two people in one being the subconscious and the other being the conscious. It is possible to make one work for the other instead of being as two separate entities almost entirely self-contained and separate. The subconscious entity is the storer of all knowledge, one might say the custodian of the records or the head librarian. The subconscious entity can be likened to a person who never goes out, never does anything except store knowledge and operate things through giving orders to others. The conscious mind, on the other hand, can be likened to a person of no memory or of very little memory, and of very little training. The person is active, jumpy, hopping from one thing to another, and only using the subconscious as a means of gaining information. Unfortunately, or otherwise, the subconscious normally is not so accessible for all types of knowledge. Most people, for example, cannot remember the time they were born, yet all that is stored in the subconscious. It is even possible by suitable means to take a hypnotized person back to the time before they were born, and although it is a most interesting experience, it is not one that we intend to deal with at length here. We will tell you, as a matter of interest, that it is possible to hypnotize a person over a series of interviews and to take that person back through successive years of the life so that we go to the time of birth, and to the time beyond birth. We can even take a person to the time, 186, when they were planning to come down to the earth again. But our purpose in this lesson is to see how we may hypnotize ourselves. It is common knowledge that anyone knows that one person can be hypnotized by another. But in this case we want to hypnotize ourselves, for many people have a distinct aversion to placing oneself at what is quite literally the mercy of another person, because, although in theory a pure, high-minded person cannot harm the one who is being hypnotized, we can claim that except in exceptional circumstances certain transference takes place. A person who has been hypnotized by another person is always more susceptible to the hypnotic commands of that person. For that reason we personally do not recommend hypnosis. We feel that before it can be perfected for medical use there should be additional safeguards. For example, no one medical practitioner should be allowed to hypnotize a person, there should always be two medical practitioners present. We would also like to see a law whereby a person who hypnotizes another has himself to be hypnotized and compulsion implanted within him so that he cannot do anything which would harm the person he is going to hypnotize. And we would like the practitioner to undergo hypnosis himself about every 3 years in order to have that safeguard to the patient renewed, otherwise the patient is truly at the mercy of the practitioner. Although we would agree that the great, great majority of practitioners are entirely honorable and entirely ethical, yet one does come across the occasional black sheep who, in this work, is very, very black indeed. Now let us get on with this business of hypnotizing oneself. If you study this lesson properly, you will indeed have a key which will enable you to unlock unsuspected powers and abilities within you. If you do not study this properly, then it will just be a meaningless babble of words and you will have wasted your time. We suggest that you go to your bedroom and pull the curtains to exclude the light, but above your eyes fix a very small light of the night light type. Extinguish all lights except that one. That light must be so arranged so that your eyes look upwards slightly, slightly higher than a straight ahead look. Turn out all the lights except that little neon glow lamp, and then, 187, stretch out as comfortably as possible upon your bed. For a few moments do nothing except breathe as evenly as you can and just let your thoughts wander. Then, after a minute or two of idle thought wandering, pull yourself together and decide quite firmly that you are going to relax. Tell yourself that you are going to relax every muscle in your body. Think of your toes, dwell upon your toes, it is more convenient to dwell upon the right toe first. Imagine that the whole of your body is a great city, imagine that you have little people occupying every cell of your body. It is these little people who work your muscles and your tendons, and who attend to the needs of the cells, that make you tingle with life. But now you want to relax, you do not want all these little people bumbling about distracting you with a twitch here or a twitch there. Concentrate first on your right toes, tell the little people in the right toes to start marching, let them march out of your toes into your foot, up to your instep, along to your ankle. Let them move up the calf of your leg along to the knee. Behind them the toes of your right foot will be limp, lifeless, completely relaxed because there is no one and nothing there to cause feeling. All these little people are marching away, marching up your leg. Your right calf is now quite relaxed, there is no feeling in it. Your right leg, in fact, is quite heavy, lifeless, numb, without feeling and so quite relaxed. March the little people all the way up to your right eye and make sure that the policemen on duty there put barriers across the road so that none may slip back. Your right leg, then, from toes to thigh is completely, utterly relaxed.